Welcome to Manager Tools. The Manager Tools Data Feedback, Part 4. This cast answers these questions. What are the data Manager Tools has gathered about delivering feedback? How have you gathered data about how to deliver feedback? How did you develop the Manager Tools feedback model? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Hey, folks, it's Mark again. If you ever wanted to see me present an effective manager conference or effective communicator conference, you can. I am doing a live in-person event in Minneapolis this year on the 11th and 12th of May. If you can make it to Minneapolis, I'd love to shake your hand or elbow bump or whatever it is we do these days. Hear your story and help you become a better manager and communicator. I hope to see you there. And one more thing, folks. I mentioned this, I think, last week. I'll just mention it again. A lot of people have written me saying how much they appreciated daily things, I think. You're welcome. I thought everybody needed it, and it was a labor of love from me. And if you're at all interested in continuing to hear from me daily, the best way to do that is subscribe to my Twitter feed, at M.A. Horstman, H-O-R-S-T-M-A-N. There's almost no ads, maybe 1 out of 100, but my Twitter feed is designed to help make you a better manager or professional or executive or just professional citizen in general. So subscribe to my Twitter feed and let me know what you think. Thanks, folks.
All right, Mark, we're getting to the home stretch here about on this particular topic.
Yes.
There's a lot to cover.
Yes.
And I think we left off last week. Now, folks, we're in part four. So if you haven't listened to parts 1 through 3, you probably ought to stop right now and go back and listen to them.
Yes.
But assuming that, we started getting to kind of what our first feedback guidance was. What did we start off first with feedback?
Yeah. So we really, I can even talk before that. I mean, we had started with one-on-ones, and we had started getting one-on-ones where we wanted them, and then clients were saying, okay, my people aren't telling their people how they're doing and so on. And so we started working on that. We did some research and we made some small tests, and then we started doing some big tests. And our first feedback guidance ever was as simple as point out something good your directs did to that directly.
Sounds pretty obvious, but managers typically don't do that.
Yeah, and you know but there's a lot of stuff packed into that, and we worked on that for several weeks to get it right. Something good they did, first of all, which we kind of stumbled on. We knew it was important. We didn't know how important it was to focus on behavior. We also made it specifically for directs, not to peers, not to bosses, stuff like that. That was the big problem. Look, if you solve the problem of managers giving feedback to directs, the problem of feedback to peers, and the problem of people feeling comfortable sharing suggestions, recommendations, ideas to their boss will solve itself. But if managers don't give feedback to the directs, you do not get the magnification of 1 to 5. You do not get as rapid improvements in the organization. And if everybody is giving feedback to everybody else, but managers are not giving feedback to the directs, whatever feedback culture you have will collapse. So we knew that.
Yeah, and I think the thing that probably wouldn't surprise folks who've been listening to us for a long time, but might surprise people who just recently joined us, was even at the very beginning, the initial guidance was point out something good your directs did.
We
didn't start with negative. And a lot of managers, when they hear feedback, that's all they hear is negative. We've talked about that a million times.
Yeah. And that has evolved over time, in part because there's been no negative feedback. And this is, again, this is the case for management training worldwide for everybody. And companies ought to be doing this. In fact, you and I have talked before, the ultimate outcome of this is companies licensing our work and teaching their folks themselves. It is astounding to me how the size of the gap between what managers are doing and what managers are capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is read all the notes we get every week from people who say, my gosh, I'm getting promoted fast. I've been promoted 3 times in 3 years, and everybody's wanting to know what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. And all I'm doing is manager tool stuff. And none of it's hard. None of this stuff is hard. And The problem is that managers aren't doing their jobs. Now, look, guys, I'm not indicting you. There are plenty of reasons why. Okay, but it's not complex. It's not difficult. It's boring. It takes discipline, and you have to be willing to try things. And your organization is not going to support you. If you were in an organization that was supporting you, they would have spent a week training you and saying, hey, this is how managing is different. Organizations assess people. That is to say, they bring them into the organization. And they hire software developers, and they make them take tests. They hire engineers. They make them take tests. If you're in a job that doesn't require technical skills or measurable skills or objective skills, they interview you for those skills, and they evaluate your trustworthiness, and they determine whether or not they trust your answer. So there are criteria for all these things, but not for managing.
Yeah,
this is how you're good at your job, and it's a different skill. And I could spend the rest of my life doing it. I am not only not apologetic about what we do, I'm excited every day to come to work and to try to fix this. And that's why we give away these podcasts, is so that people can learn on their own. And you can know it's not your fault. It's okay. And there's a better path. There really is. But look, we said point out something good. You're right. Good. And, you know, managers don't give feedback. Why? Because a lot of directs don't like getting negative feedback. Why? Because managers don't give feedback. It's as simple as that. We're not doing a core skill. And I'll tell you something else. I've been talking lately about the Tetris effect, the feeling you get that when you start working on the right things, other things happen that are good. And that's exactly what happens when you get feedback right. And one of the ways to get feedback right is start with positive. In fact, stick with positive. Point out the stuff your folks do good. You'll discover that your path to giving negative feedback is just to tell people often how good they are. Then they will start begging you for negative feedback. And when they start begging you, you can screw it up when you deliver it and they'll forgive you. But if you don't give them any positive and all you do is negative and you wait a long time until there's a pattern, now you're breaking the bonds of trust. And that will hurt you in every way, in addition to the feedback not really working very well.
That's right. And also, we didn't teach a specific script at that time when we first put out our
didn't. Yeah. Again, we said, point out something good your directs did to that direct, meaning singularly and then directly, right? We didn't, no group stuff. And no, there was no script. We didn't really want a script. The reason we teach scripts today is because when we teach scripts, use of feedback vastly improves. Directs push back less. Managers don't screw it up. And I guess we don't say that often enough, but we don't teach scripts to talk down to anybody. We teach scripts because we tried not teaching scripts, and teaching scripts worked better, a lot better. And then we validated this by asking managers whether they had given feedback to whom and when. And at the same time, we asked their directs almost always on a weekly basis, particularly for directs, but usually for managers too, whether they had received feedback. So there wasn't any focus on behavior. We stumbled into that by saying something they did. A manager could have said to direct in that study, you know, I really appreciate your attitude. In this case, we've got the I before the you, which we don't recommend these days, and the addressing of attitude versus externally measurable behavior. I wish, a few times over the last 15 years, I don't think too many, I've said if I had a magic wand or if I could snap my fingers, one of the things I would do is put clearly in the minds of all managers this idea of feedback, the focus on feedback. Mm-hmm. Your organization, folks, I'm really sorry. I'm the only one saying this. Nobody else is saying it. I don't care. Your organization doesn't care how you feel. It doesn't. It's not built that way. It was never intended to. It never will. Now, your colleagues, you care about how they feel, but your organization doesn't care how you feel. Your organization doesn't pay you for how you feel. Your organization doesn't reward you for your ideas, your attitudes, your beliefs, your motivations. It only rewards, and the marketplace only rewards, your behavior. That's it. And yet, we all spend all of our time trying to guess what the motivation was of some behavior so we can get to the upstream idea, so that we can dam the problem sooner upstream, so that we can fix somebody so they won't do that again. It's ludicrous.
It's literally, it's like the guy who's looking for his keys, the drunk guy who's looking for his keys, and he's on the street, and he's lost them, his car keys, thankfully, and he's looking underneath the light, and the cop comes up to help him, says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm looking for my keys." "Did you lose them here?" He says, "No, but the light's better here." That's what everybody's doing. They're looking in the wrong places, the places where it's easier to look. Now, look, we only counted as feedback an instance where a manager said, "Yeah, I gave that person feedback," and the direct also reported they had received that feedback. Okay. And this measurement occurred before and during the time that we began to see that the data favored those managers who stuck to behavior and covered it first before describing outcomes. We would look at which managers were getting better results, and we were trying to figure out which constructions, which deliveries, which words were more effective than other words. And the managers who put I in it and talked about how they feel and talked about attitude and motivation and intent and expressed frustration when they gave negative feedback did a lot less well than managers who focused on behavior, put the behavior first, and then described impacts. By the way, an interesting artifact of the half-life of feedback delivery, which we only learned because there wasn't good research on it regarding feedback, is that if we didn't sample managers weekly, managers and directs' reporting of instances varied so widely, we chose to stop gathering the data.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, if a manager said she had given some feedback 2 weeks prior to our data gathering, the chances were roughly between 25 and 35% that the direct recalled it or agreed with them. 25%. Now, if you're trying to give me feedback 2 weeks ago, in this case, we're talking about them recalling something from 2 weeks ago. So I'm using that as a simulacrum for memory. If you gave feedback on something that happened 2 weeks ago, there's only a 25 to 35% likelihood that your direct is going to agree with you about what happened 2 weeks ago. They're only going to agree with you about a quarter of the time. And so basically, after our second significant study, we started to require weekly reporting. And when we did weekly reporting, alignment between directs and managers improved to 90%. By the way, we saw among managers with high trust no difference in recollection of good or bad feedback. In other words, they didn't accept all the good and then push back on the bad, and that's what gave us 70%. No, not at all.
I would have thought that they would have recalled the negative feedback more than the positive feedback. Yeah, interesting.
No.
People are so starved for feedback, they remember it regardless.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's still true. And that's one of the reasons why managers screwed up. Because people are so starved for feedback, and they expect their manager to do it. Everyone understands this. Humans actually have evolved to the point where we understand how organizations work. And we understand that our boss is obligated by the company in their role for the company. They speak for the company. And the feedback the company is going to give me about how I'm contributing is supposed to come from my boss. And if my boss doesn't do it, my boss is not doing her job. Everyone understands that. In fact, well, we could have a long story about the genesis of all that and evolution and sociobiology and everything else. Look. Okay, changing back to core story here. We've done 6 studies of feedback involving over 1,000 managers. We've done an additional 9 smaller studies with over 300, but less than 1,000 managers. I think one of them had 350. Most of them had between 500 and 1,000. All of these studies lasted a minimum of 6 months. We loved them, by the way, because we felt we were learning. Our reports on one-on-ones to clients, they thought were interesting, but they were fascinated by what we were learning about feedback. It just told you that nobody knew how to do it. And nobody did it enough to really, very few people did it enough to really feel confident in what they themselves were experiencing. And I remember specifically people leaving the rooms, going back and saying, I learned 5 or 6 things. I can try stuff that relate to the, that keep me with inside the bounds on those five or six things, and then I can try stuff that will work for me, and we'll see what works and what doesn't work. So in a way, a lot of the improvements that were made to the manager tools feedback model, first invented at Horstman & Company years ago, were by managers who we were basically telling them about the results of our experiments. By the way, the directs loved it too. I mean, it's completely anecdotal, but the number of directs who says, I don't care what you're doing. My boss tells me how I'm doing. And I was like, okay, hey, you know, we asked the managers a couple of times, do you want directs to come in? You know, you want them in the briefing? Quite a few managers said yes, but a lot of the managers said no. That continues to this day. Managers and executives don't want to learn in front of the directs, which is stupid and wrongheaded. And you need to get over that, folks. But regardless, results are better when you learn together. But some managers said, no, I really want to do it. So they'd come up to some of my guys and say, can you give us a special briefing? My guys and I would love to hear it. And then we'd like to talk about how I give them feedback. And we would say, sure. Now, it'd have to be short because you can't believe how many people it takes to survey 900 managers every week and all the directs. You know, assume average span of control of 7. You know, what is 9 times 7? 63. That's 6,300 directs. It's a lot of work. But we would do these short half-hour briefings, and then managers would sit in a room with their directs and talk about, okay, what did we learn? What do you think that means? What do you want me to do? What can I do? Okay, no, I'm not doing that. Okay, I'll try that. Now, what's not to like about that? I've never understood why that wouldn't be a good thing. So anyway, okay. And by the way, there were many other studies, all of significant enough size to allow confidence in the minds of the clients we were working for. But generally speaking, we try to keep it above 300 because I like that sample number and what it does for our confidence levels about the data coming out of it. To some degree, our data, frankly, we admit this, could be considered biased because we chose to measure jobs, specialties, and organizations that were already well measured to begin with. There are many roles that it would be nearly impossible to provide such data on because there are no baseline metrics from which to measure improvement. This is important. Now, I'm not saying, folks, and this is 20 years ago, I'm not saying that some jobs, because they don't have a baseline measure, don't respond well to feedback. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we needed a baseline, and there were a lot of jobs and corporations that didn't have any baseline, which ought to tell you something. If you don't have any baseline, those people aren't getting any feedback. Or if they are, it's pretty arbitrary from a boss who hasn't been trained, which sure sounds like a recipe for disaster to me. But I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Am I ranting too much, Mike? I don't feel like I'm ranting.
No, I don't. Anybody's listened to this for a long time.
He said no.
Learns to love it. So yeah. There you go.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a serious problem, but really it's beyond the scope of this guidance and of our work. It just bugged me. It really, really bugged me. I had a couple of managers who found out that they were in organizations where we're going to do some work and they were really excited. And then we realized they don't have enough baseline stuff and they were almost choked up about it. And really that was some of our first individual client work, Mike, was managers saying, can you guys do this just for me?
Yeah. And guess what? Every single one of those managers is just a complete animal, right? I mean, they're at the top of the list. We have two types of clients. Clients who always want to get better, right? And they're really good and they want to get a lot better. And then occasionally we get the client who, they've been told they need to improve or find a new job. It's much more fun to work with the former.
In three organizations that were desperate for us to help, and basically because somebody left one of the companies we'd worked with, gone there and said, okay, we got to get this guy in. We got to do this stuff. We got to start teaching our managers this stuff. It's amazing what it does. We agreed to create metrics for them because I was being pushed, and of course they were paying us for us. But it was tangential. It was associated with what we did, but it was outside of our area, and so we had to bring in some specialists. But even just the creation of metrics for the first time led to performance improvements, which ought not to surprise anybody, greatest management principle in the world. And the things that get measured are the things that get done. The problem with that for us is it hampered our ability to separate metrics-driven improvements from feedback behavior improvements. We admit that. But look, you mentioned about there was no script in our first study. We studied over 700 managers in that study in two similar divisions, large multinational company. There were three groups of managers and their directs, numbering about 3,900 people total. Some managers had as few as one direct. By the way, we never controlled for a span of control. Not once. You have one, you have 10. We don't care because that's the way the world is. Some managers had as many as 16 and some had even more than that. There was a control group, which are told to continue doing whatever they had done before, to include doing manager tools one-on-ones for the record. And then there was an all group that was specifically instructed not to give any individual feedback except when performance risk, like danger of firing, required it. And then there was a test group using the guidance we were testing out at that time to see if it would work or not. Okay, so all of these managers, let's be clear, I think I've said this before, all these managers have been investing time in building trust with their directs through our one-on-one guidance for at least 8 weeks before beginning feedback, okay? We would learn later that if we gave more time, we went to 12 weeks, as those of you who have rolled out the Trinity know, feedback, when you implement it, led to higher improvement scores and, interestingly enough, higher trust scores, which I just love. That's a Tetris effect right there. We measured the amount of feedback received by directs on a weekly basis from the test group and the control group, right? The group that was doing whatever they did before. By the way, we had measured the control group before we started. And once we started measuring, their directs said, I'm getting more feedback now than I used to. Which actually helped us, but I had to report that to the clients. Like, this is not a pure comparison of what used to happen versus what happened, because, you know, the things that get measured are the things that get done. They know we're measuring them, and they know they should be doing it, and they haven't been doing it, and so they're doing it more. Not a lot more, but it was significant. We measured the amount of feedback received by directs on a weekly basis from the test group. We didn't measure feedback in the null group for lack of resources, but the general feeling was, yeah, those people weren't given feedback. By the way, we stopped using null groups after three such studies because of poor outcomes. It was the old ethical dilemma. We asked in this study managers to give one item of feedback each day to any of their directs. Not one instance to each direct, but one to any one of their directs. One a day. By the way, if a manager refused to do it, he was dropped from the study, which some people would argue, oh, that improved your numbers. I really don't think so. But anyway, after 15 weeks, trust scores now, and performance metrics improved notably in the test group and nominally in the control group. In the test group, performance improved on average by 10%, which, if you're wondering, oh, that 10% doesn't sound like much, I need 50. That was highly desirable by the organization. They were thrilled by that. Trust scores, which had already improved, continued to improve 5 to 10% above previous levels. Folks, this was no script and what we now know to be inefficient delivery, the vast majority of them. And look, while it doesn't count as data, anecdotal comments gathered from directs were telling. In this first study we did, and in all of our subsequent studies, comments range from, this is what I always wanted, to, I was worried, but it turned out great. I didn't know my manager had noticed. He finally told me he valued my work. Anonymized direct comments were shared broadly with managers, which I suppose could be considered anti-scientific, but this wasn't a laboratory. It was a human organization. I'm tired of people telling me, well, if it were a lab, we could do this, we could do that. Yeah, and if wishes were horses, beggars would ride. In the null group, trust scores stayed flat, and performance basically remained at original levels. And anecdotally, some managers didn't like not being able to give feedback, and they made a big show of, hey, I give a lot of feedback. I didn't believe it. We ran a second study at another large firm about a year later, over 500 managers, 3,000 plus directs, only two groups, test and control, roughly equal size. Both groups had already implemented one-on-ones, And look, guys, I admit this was an expansion of our product line based on client demand. And so we had finished doing our one-on-one stuff, and then we had something else to sell them. I make no bones about that. And the reason we sold it to them, because it was valuable, because they benefited far more than they paid for our work. It was a good investment on their part. And by the way, in this group, we look for managers who had been doing their one-on-ones at the 85% level, the compliance level, for 4 months. And the group, this group versus the first test we ever did, basically has achieved the same results, basically a 10% performance improvement and a continuation of the increase in trust scores, similar levels. We did notice, no question, when you aggregate a whole bunch of managers, you notice that some managers are doing better than others. Now, we can fairly confidently attribute those managers who performed better as having used more structure. We didn't specifically measure that. It wasn't part of the test. So we don't really call that data per se. Now, look, other research we had done before and during all this led us to believe that directs responded most favorably to performance communications about their behavior. Performance communications about their mental state or intent or attitude were just not as well received. And by the way, guys, just full disclosure, when I say that, you might say, well, I don't know, I've given some feedback to my directs and it's kind of gone okay. Well, maybe you have a really high trust score, or maybe you think it went okay, but your direct doesn't. But the point I like to make with folks is, if you're going to test your feedback on attitude, intent, motivation versus behavior, verifiable behavior, external behaviors for which there are definitions, you have to remember, you have to compare equally feedback about negative intent, negative motivations, negative attitude, as well as positive. You might think that when you give feedback about, hey, that was great thinking back there, well done, you might think that that's feedback about mentality and it's not about behavior. And you might be right. We could argue about that. But the problem is negative intent, negative motivation, negative thinking, right? That's the one that's the problem. And you can't teach that. No, wait, let me put it this way. One of our core premises became very quickly, you cannot teach two different models. You can't. I mean, you can, but you'll get really bad results. Feedback is just feedback. The moment you start teaching two, you're telling people there are things that we like and things that we don't like. There are things that will reward and there are things that will punish. There are, when I talk to you when you do something good, I'm going to treat you nice. When I talk to you when you did something bad, I'm going to treat you not nice. And we discovered managers did not do well with that. And that when we did that, trust scores for the first time ever declined. It's just not, It's not, you know, that doesn't work. Hey folks, it's Mark. Just letting you know that in talking to Kate, who runs our client business, she's telling us that we are starting to book up client bookings throughout the next three quarters, Q2, Q3, and Q4. That's a little unusual, but I think this year is a little unusual year as we figure out the balance between the hybrid of virtual and in-person. But we're starting to get requests for Q4, which is quite early. So if you're at all interested in talking to us about this year, I recommend you give Maggie at manager-tools.com, send her an email, and we'll be happy to talk to you and see if we can't support you. Thanks. So in the beginning, when we started doing this behavior stuff, it was hard to teach because managers believed and still do to a large degree that, as I said earlier, that they, the managers, could discern intent of their directs by observing their behavior. It's stupid. It's just incredibly stupid, but whatever. Managers believed, mistakenly, that they were good at determining intent. Folks, you're not. It's rarely true in our experience. And believe me, our experience was backed up by mounds of data from directs. Based on our interviews with managers, the general rationale for doing this, talking about intent, as I said before, if the managers could get to the root cause of the good or bad behaviors, focusing on the behaviors did not provide as much leverage as addressing the direct's thought processes or motivations and so on. You know, if you can get to the levers of the person, if you can control their mind, you can control their hands. The problem is, it only works if you can correctly infer intent, which you can't. We tried and tried and tried. The classic mistake is about one third of people, I would even say one fourth, but I'll give you one third of people tend to have similar behavioral tendencies to you. Okay. And all of us are individually different, but there are patterns. So let's say it's one third. When you see somebody do something, the way the typical adult thinks about why they did what they did is the adult who's thinking about it, let's say the manager who's thinking about it, asks, what would I have to have been thinking in order for me to do that? And then they assume that that's what the other person was thinking. But that's only right one third of the time. People do things for different reasons. Your way of looking at the world is your way. It's not everybody else's way. We don't see the world the way the world is. We see the world the way we are. So when we sifted through our reporting, the problem became pretty clear. Managers tended to address intent or motivation far more often when they were giving negative feedback than they were giving positive feedback. And this has always been a huge problem between managers and directs, right? And while we weren't testing for it specifically, our data bore it out. Directs commented routinely, frequently, and often vehemently that addressing what we started calling AIM, A-I-M, attitude, intent, motivation, felt like an attack on them personally. Whereas behavioral feedback was addressing their work product, which they saw as being within the manager's purview. Now, what's interesting about it is managers would then give positive feedback about behaviors. And the reason why, I would argue, is because the behaviors that the person did are closer to the results the manager wants. So in other words, it's almost like you get to play Jekyll and Hyde. I'm going to be nice to you when you're good, but I'm going to try to fix you when you're bad. And I'm sorry, other adult human beings aren't going to sit still for that. They won't. And look, in follow-up discussions with hundreds, and perhaps by point, you know, through 2 or 3 years into some of this work, thousands of managers, we receive plenty of requests, folks, plenty of requests for more prescriptive guidance. Every time we gave them tighter guidance, things got better. Now, look, managers who had seen the improvements in their team members' performance wanted more stuff. They wanted, hey, what else you got? We think it's ironic, and it's risible, that today more specific guidance is often called out as micromanagement, when only 25 years ago, managers were basically begging us for scripts. And please, don't tell me that because of phones and technology, humankind has changed. Humankind hasn't changed in 10,000 years. Sorry. And that's not me. That's all the greatest sociologists and anthropologists of history. They wanted more details. I slacked something internally here, Mike, recently that everybody responded to at the company, that we get pushback that our setting daily and or weekly goals for directs whom you're coaching, whether they're your top performer or your bottom performer, is irrelevant, is micromanagement. And I said, no, it's not micromanagement. It's agile. Isn't it funny the number of people who are loving agile and daily stand-ups and what are you working on? And let's have a sprint and you have to work on this right now. And you have to finish it today and then work on something else tomorrow. And you have to tell us what your obstacles are and so on. That's agile. That's cool. But giving somebody tasks that have to be done each week, that's micromanaging. So if you think that learning a script is micromanagement, you're mistaken. You're sadly mistaken. And we have data to support it. And all you have are your anecdotes. Really, not that much has changed in the organizations and in the past quarter century. The idea that managers giving specific actionable feedback about behaviors is somehow micromanaging was ludicrous. It was wrong then. It's wrong now. Almost no direct in most organizations today is micromanaged. Not even close. Not even in the ballpark. On a scale of 0 to 10, the average person is managed at a level of 2 or 3, with 10 being micromanagement. The best managers we track score a 6 or 7 in terms of micromanagement. So it's just a personal preference. People just don't want to manage. And part of the reason for that is they don't know how. And that's okay. We respect that. That's why we're here. But for some directs, you know, if you're a two or three and you try to get to try to increase your involvement, your encouragement, your direction, your feedback, your coaching to the, to a direct, they call that micromanagement. And it'd be funny if it weren't for the fact that it had a chilling effect on manager behaviors when HR swoops in support of the direct who complains and suggests the manager change their behavior because the direct feels micromanaged. HR, shame on you. You are hurting managers everywhere. I love you, HR. I don't love all HR. I hate bad HR. But I love good HR, and there's plenty of good HR. But HR, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You're not a union. Your job is not to protect the employee. Your job is to protect the company. And actually, that means you ought to be more on the side of the manager. But I get emails probably, I can't say once a week. Once every 2 weeks, two a month. Let's say two a month from managers saying, I went to your training. You guys told me to do X. My company hired you guys to come in and do training. I went to the training and I have a direct who's complaining. He's feeling micromanaged because of one-on-ones and feedback. And HR just came down and told me to stop. Now, this company just paid us to tell that manager to do some stuff. And we're measuring that manager, and that manager is getting evaluated on that. And then HR comes down and doesn't know what didn't come to the training and then says, no, you have to stop because this one person. It's as if that everybody's a delicate flower, that they get what they want. It's as if every big company should be able to manage every individual how the individual likes, that the individual doesn't have a responsibility to figure out what the organization likes and move in that direction. The claim of micromanagement as it relates to feedback is equivalent to giving a house to someone who doesn't have one, who then complains that they feel claustrophobic. An organization can't survive without responding to external feedback. Market. When I say external, I mean market and societal feedback. An organization cannot continue to survive if its managers do not respond to the feedback that leadership representing society delivers to them. Ipso facto, managers must then deliver commensurate feedback to the directs. This is just, it's almost evolutionary biology 101.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll continue on this topic next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.